Alex Robertson. Now on Radio 4 FM, our Book of the Week and more from a travel classic, broadcast to mark 100 years since the birth of its author, Laurie Lee. Spain comes into sight, but what awaits? In As I Walked Out One Midsummer Morning.
It was early and still almost dark when our ship reached the harbour, and I was woken and hooked to the coast of Spain by the rattling anchor going over the side. I packed and went up onto the shining deck, and the Spanish sun rose too, and for the first time in my life I saw, looped around the bay, the shape of a foreign city. There was no smoke or movement among the houses in Vigo. I landed in a town where people lay sleeping sprawled on the ground, like bodies washed up by the tide. But I was in Spain, and the new life beginning. The drowned men rose from the pavements, lit cigarettes, and shook the night from their clothes. Strange, vivid girls went down the streets, with hair like coils of dripping tar, and large mouths, red and savage. I suddenly felt the urge to get moving, so I changed my shillings for pesetas, bought some bread and fruit, and left the seaport behind me. I spent the rest of the day climbing a steep terraced valley, then camped for the night on a craggy hilltop which commanded an eagle's view of the distant harbour. Here I could look out in all directions, see where I had been that day, and much of the country still to come. Wild and silent, it rolled rhythmically and desolately away, and faced with its alien magnificence, I felt the first twinge of uneasy excitement. The Galician night came quickly, and the hills turned purple. The jagged coastline below, now dark and glittering, looked like sweepings of broken glass. Vigo was already smothered in the dead blue dusk. Only the sky and the ocean stayed alive, running with immense streams of flame. Then, as the sun went down, it seemed to drag the whole sky with it, like the shreds of a burning curtain. I found a rough little hollow out of the wind, ate some bread and dates, unrolled the blanket, and wrapped myself inside it. I laid the fiddle beside me, used the knapsack as a pillow, and prepared to sleep. I slept little that night. I was attacked by wild dogs, and only by throwing stones and flashing my torch in their eyes was I able to keep them at bay. Not till early dawn did they finally leave me and run yelping away down the hillside, when I fell at last into a nightmare doze. When I awoke next morning, it was already light, and voices were screaming at one another in the valley. I was heavily drenched in dew. I crawled up onto the ridge and lay in the rising sun, and was met by the resinous smell of drying bushes, peppery herbs, and stones. As I warmed my stiff limbs, I looked down the valley and saw a group of old women, as black as charcoal, slapping out sheets along the banks of a stream. Galician peasant women. Their thin, bent bodies knelt over the water, jerking up and down like drinking hens. And as they worked, they shrieked, firing off metallic bursts of speech that bounced off the rocks like bullets. I lay on my belly and forgot the wolves of the night. I felt it was for this I had come, to wake up at dawn on a hillside and look out on a world for which I had no words. One afternoon, I was out in the plain past Zamora, in an electric haze of heat, walking a white dust road as straight as a canal, banked by shimmering wheat and poppies. The thick, silent dust crept into my sandals and between my toes, stuck like rime to my lips and eyelashes. I walked head down, not daring to look at the sky, which seemed to be one huge sun. About 5 o'clock, I at last saw a break in the landscape, a red clay village, dry as the earth around it and compact as a termite's nest. I stumbled out of the wheat field onto this evening village to find it in the drowsy grip of harvest. In a cleared space by the roadside, the menfolk were threshing, driving little sleigh carts over the scattered sheaves, each drawn by a mule wearing garlands of leaves to keep off the sleepy flies. Women and girls, in broad hats and veils, stood in circles winnowing the grain in the wind, tossing and catching it in drifts of gold. Gilded from head to foot with chaff, the villagers clustered together around the threshing floor like a swarm of summer-laden bees. Some of them shouted a greeting as I approached. Then children ran from the alleys and encircled me. "Look at the foreigner," they cried, as though they had made me up. They aped my walk and grinned and beckoned, and finally led me to the village inn. I went inside and found the usual spacious barn hanging with freshly watered flowers. Chickens pecked at the floor, and swallows flashed from the high arched ceiling. A middle-aged woman sat just inside the door stitching at a piece of lace. She was fleshy but handsome, with the strong, brooding eyes of the matriarch. The children crowded at the doorway, watching me expectantly as though I was a firework just about to go off. "Donna Maria," they shouted, "we have brought you a Frenchman." The woman put down her sewing and thanked them, then let out a shriek that sent them scattering up the street. After which she considered me for a moment over the top of her steel-rimmed spectacles and then said, "Rest, and I will get you some food." I slumped down at the table and lay with my head in my arms, listening to the woman's movements, the rattle of the pan on the fire, the crack of an eggshell, the hiss of frying oil. My head was swimming with heat. Presently the woman pushed some fried eggs before me and poured me a glass of purple wine. Then she returned to her sewing and was joined by a girl. Together they sat and watched me. In that great bare room under the diving swallows, I ate the honoured meal of the stranger, while the women murmured together, their needles darting like silver fish. At dusk, an old man came in from threshing and pouring himself some wine and sat down at the table.
"What do I have we?" he asked the woman.
She looked at me again.
"Ah, a poor devil who is walking the world."
The man filled up my glass and jerked his thumb to his mouth.
"Drink, and may it give you strength. You want to sleep here tonight?" asked Donna Maria after a while.
"How much?"
"For a straw sack, 2 pennies.
"Good," I said. "Then I will sleep with you."
"No, you will sleep on the sack."
2 dusty young men came through the open door, leading a pig and a sheep on a rope.
"My sons," said Donna Maria.
They poured water over their heads, then filled up the trough for the animals. Mother and daughter set the table for supper, and then, with formal requests for forgiveness, the family began its meal. We sat close together, the men drinking and smoking, elbows at rest among the empty plates. The daughter, sitting close to the only lamp, buried her fingers in her sewing and listened, raising her huge Arab eyes every moment or so, to meet my glance of dumb conjecture. But the brothers surrounded me, and Donna Maria crouched near, watching me with warm but suspicious indulgence. Suddenly, one of the sons spotted my rolled-up blanket with the violin sticking out of it.
"Musica!" he cried,
and went and fetched the bundle and laid it gingerly on the table before me.
"Yes, a man," said Donna Maria. "Come, touch us a little tune."
I tried a woozy fandango. The daughter stiffened her body. The boys grabbed a handful of spoons and began slapping them against their knees, and the woman leapt to her feet and started stamping the ground, raising great clouds of dust. Not to be outdone, the old man left the shadows, struck a posture, and faced the woman. Donna Maria, all flesh, he thin as a straw. Together they began a dance of merciless contest. The boys thumping their spoons, the woman shouted, "Ha!" And the hens flew squawking under the table. The sons asked me for another tune, and this time they danced together, with linked arms, rather sedate and formal. The daughter came quietly and sat on the floor beside me, watching my fingers as I played. The scent of her nearness swam around me with a mixture of pig's lard and sharp, clean lavender. Then the boys fetched the mattresses and laid them down by the wall.
"Hugh, sleep there," said the mother. "My sons will watch you." She pulled knowingly at one of her eyelids. "Come, then."
And the daughter rose from her knees and followed her. I was ready for sleep and stretched myself out on the floor. The boys came and lay down on each side of me, settling their limbs with little grunts. The boys were up early at about 4:30, coughing and stamping around the barn. The doors were thrown open to let in the cold pink dawn, and the animals were driven out to the fields. I was still heavy with wine, but soon the daughter was about, with her birch twig broom sweeping the chickens across my face. So I got up from the floor, and the daughter led me out into the yard, showed me how to use the pump, gave me a piece of soap as hard as a stone, and departed to light the stove. Breakfast was a wedge of dry bread and a bowl of soup-thick coffee floating with fatty gobs of goat's milk. By the time I had swallowed it, all the village was on the move. Framed in the open doorway, great golden wagons went swaying down the cobbled street. As I stood ready to leave, I heard a shout behind me.
"Where is the stranger?"
And Donna Maria strode forth, wildly disarrayed from her bed, and thrust a handful of figs into my shirt.
"Say nothing of that. What a night the old one had."
Down by the river, under an olive tree, a group of girls were drawing water. As I came down the lane, their chattering stopped, and they turned their heads all together to watch me. I padded past quickly, and nobody moved, but their eyes followed me, like the eyes in a painting. After a couple of hours or so, still in the grip of a romantic melancholy, I stopped by a little roadside shrine, which announced that a boy, aged 10, had been killed on this spot by a madman, and asked travellers to pray for them both. I ate the cool green figs which Donna Maria had given me, then walked on.
Tobias Menzies was reading from As I Walked Out One Midsummer Morning by Laurie Lee. The producer was Duncan Minshall. Tomorrow, the shadowy and teeming charms of Madrid. That's at the same time here on Radio 4. The average age of a foster carer is 42. After the news, Woman's Hour discusses what might be putting off younger carers and why they're so urgently needed.
On BBC Radio 4.
No one is suggesting that the minute aggression occurs around the world, some form of superpower police squad is going to come and sort out.
Well, on what basis do you distinguish between one and the other?
Let me give an example.
Provocative live debate.
One of the things that you talk about, respect quite a lot. I think, and I respect your difference. That's just basically saying there isn't anything such a thing as morality. It's just about individual choice. Actually, morality is a stronger thing than that.
The new series of The Moral Maze with Michael Burke.
Would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it'd probably be a good thing.
To keep politics out of
space. Yeah, well, I assume you wanted a short answer.
Exactly.
Tomorrow evening at 8:00.